This is Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Think back to your middle school or junior high yearbook picture. Do you cringe a little bit? If you're like me, you remember a hormone-filled, socially awkward period of your life where your mind has developed faster than your body. Or maybe the other way around. For those of us who have taught middle school, we also know that the ages 11 through 14 can be a time of intellectual and emotional awakening for young people when they discover their talents and interests and meet lifelong friends. Kansas City Public Schools have been looking at redesigning middle school programs. In the past 5 years, the district has moved middle schoolers into elementary schools, then into high schools, and they're now considering reopening standalone middle schools. I reported on this for Casey Currents this past weekend, but today on Central Standard, we take a broader look at middle grades education in other local districts. How much do those years determine who we become? And what's the best configuration and format to meet the social, emotional, and intellectual needs of tweens? Joining us today are Scott Carr of the Liberty School District. Welcome.
Hi.
And Mike Brown, Assistant Superintendent of Platte County. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
And from a studio in Columbus, Ohio, Drew Tomlin. He's Director of Middle Level Services at the Association for Middle Level Education. Thanks for joining us, Drew.
Of course. Thank you.
Now, not to put you all on the spot, but I wonder, what was middle school like for you? And I wonder if we can begin with you, Scott.
You bet. Well, I've been fortunate that not only do I work in Liberty, but I also grew up in Liberty. And so my experience has been there with the Liberty schools. And, those were great years for me that I remember trying to figure out who I wanted to be and where I was. It's when I started getting into sports and finding out who my friend base was. And so I really remember enjoying that time, but I also remember it being a challenge to figure out who I was and who I hoped to be.
There must have been something to that because you went back to that middle school, right?
I did. And I've always told my kids, be careful how you behave because you never know. You may go back looking for a job someday. And fortunately, I was a pretty decent kid, so they let me back in again.
And you've been there for quite a while.
I have. This is my 22nd year on staff there at the junior high.
Interesting. And there's a junior high school now in Liberty.
Right. We have a kind of an interesting configuration. We have a middle school, we have two middle schools actually, which are 6-7, two junior highs that are 8-9, and then our high schools are 10-12. And that configuration occurred back in the early 1990s due to growth, and Liberty's been facing that challenge ever since.
And we're going to be talking about the changes going into effect now in Liberty in the next hour. But Mike Brown from Platte County right now, tell me about your middle school years.
I grew up in St. Louis, and it was a Catholic education. So I went, I was in a school building that was K-8 all the way through. And so obviously when I became a teacher and administrator, it was quite different than, how most of the public schools are set up. So although I very much enjoyed my experience, and I felt like I had a really good education with good teachers and good administrators, but it was the K-8 model.
Interesting. We're going to be talking about that model, too. Drew, I wonder, what about you?
Well, I grew up in a Marine Corps family, so I moved around every 2 or 3 years, so I was adjusting to that kind of environment anyways. But then I went to a junior high in Virginia Beach, and it was a 7th through 9th grade model. And personally, not to reveal too much, but I was, I'd say a socially maladjusted 7th, 8th grader. And but academically, it did all right, and I would say that really if it weren't for band programs that I was in, and I found my love through the tuba, and that was my hallmark. That and the teachers that gave me comfort as well in that junior high setting. So, yep, that's me.
Interesting. Well, I actually taught middle school at a kindergarten to 8th grade school in New York City, and I really love that age group because they're so passionate and they don't put up that blasé facade of high school students yet. I wonder if we can just talk, maybe jump into Liberty first. Scott, you're currently changing the program now. You have a 6th and a 7th grade middle school and an 8th and a 9th grade or two, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Junior high schools. How does that affect kids to have that kind of configuration? That's two transitions, which people in middle school education are talking a lot about, trying to eliminate transitions.
Well, I think there's been pros and cons. I think on the pro side, having kids with being with their age group that's closer. You know, sometimes parents will worry about having a wide range of ages with their kids, having young kids with older kids, and I think sometimes that's a reservation. And so our current system has been good for that. However, like you said, having multiple transitions, especially at a time when stability is so important for kids, has been a negative factor that we hope to address with our change.
And what are you changing to?
We are going to move our ninth graders into the high school, so we'll have a more traditional 9 through 12 setting at both high schools. And we're going to take the four buildings we currently have and make them all 6th through 8th grade middle schools. So we'll have four middle schools.
And I know that Kansas City officials recently visited Liberty as a model for how to restructure middle schools. I wonder, how are you setting up those middle school buildings to best educate the kids?
Well, you know, and I think that's really what it's about. You know, I think it's more important about what we do with the kids when we get them, more so than how we arrange them or our grade levels. And so one thing we've really focused on over the last 18 months has been the curriculum expectations for the courses we want to offer. At the middle level, we really want to make sure the kids have a lot of opportunities to explore and to find out where their interests lie and how those interests can connect to their future. And so those are some of the things we've really focused on. Some of the challenges we faced, obviously, is we've taken over 200 teachers and reassigned them across six buildings, not only the four middle schools, but the two high schools to service the ninth graders moving up. And so that's been my role, has been to oversee that over the last 18 months as the coordinator for the reconfiguration. So we've seen the challenges, but our main focus is what do we do with the kids? How do we support the kids once they're in our building?
And how's the kind of culture of the middle school, 6-7, different from the 8-9 grade?
It's a lot different. That's what I'm finding out. You know, all my experiences with 8th and 9th graders. And so even personally, I've been on a journey to figure out how to work with 6th graders in particular, how to transition a student from the elementary level of one teacher to a secondary level of multiple teachers, finding your locker, all those little things that I take for granted right now as a junior high. And so I think the culture is very different. The way we organize our rules, the way we support kids has to be shifted based on their need and their age and what they're used to.
And in some places, kids go straight in sixth grade to a more of a high school type system. Drew, I wonder if I can bring you into the conversation there. What's most typical right now for those middle grades?
In terms of configuration, we definitely see there's more of a move towards a 6-8 model. But, you know, with the association, the work that we do and what we find is that really we're working with kids 10 to 15 years old, regardless of the grade level structure that they're in. And, you know, I heard Scott and Mike talk about transitions and eliminating transitions, and that is key from the standpoint of making them less rocky. The transitions are going to happen, but they can't just happen in the middle level. They've got to happen the conversation needs to really happen at the elementary and the high school level too, so we can see, okay, you're going to have some kids coming into the middle level. What are they like? And then when these middle level kids go from middle level to high school, what kind of transitional services do they need to happen? So eliminating transitions is true, but it's got to be a less rocky one. So I'd say, but to get to your question about the grade configuration, I think 6-8 is definitely the move that we see most predominantly.
And are most of those schools, I know when I went to a junior high school, but it basically was like high school. We just went to different periods and had different teachers and, you know, it was just with younger kids.
Right. And that's the junior high model. And there are a lot of schools, and I've been at them too, where it said middle school outside on the marquee, but they operated as a junior high. And that is where you have content area specialist teachers who just teach the one subject. But the middle school model is really built on something that we call teaming, where you might have four teachers or three to four teachers on a team, and they deal just with those 100 some odd kids throughout the day. And you could have a teacher who teaches, like I taught both language arts, reading, and social studies all throughout the day and saw kids multiple times. So it's that configuration within the 6-8 model that differentiates the middle school from the junior high, which you're describing and that I went through too in Virginia Beach.
Is that a challenge for kids at that age to have basically almost a high school type schedule?
I think it can be. I think one of the things that middle school kids are thirsty for is finding those connections. What's the purpose of what I'm learning? How is this relevant to me? What's the relationship between language arts and social studies and math and science? So by having a team of teachers collaborating and working and planning together, it helps them make those connections so then the kids can make those connections. When teachers are in different little silos and working in, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, a compartmentalized way of teaching, they don't make those connections necessarily, and then the kids don't make those connections. So, yeah, that does become a struggle.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Our guests are Drew Tomlin of the Association for Middle Level Education, Scott Carr of the Liberty School District, and Mike Brown of Platte County School District. And we're talking about those dreaded middle school years. How did middle school or junior high affect who you became? Kansas City, join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Or you can post to Facebook. Now, Mike Brown of Platte County, tell us about the configuration for your middle-level kids there.
Sure. We have quite a unique situation. We're a growing school district, and on the north end of our district, we actually have quite a few transitions where we have a kindergarten building that then goes to a 1-3 building. Children then go to a 4-5 building to a eventually a 6-7-8 building, with one high school for both ends of the district. On the south end of our district, we have a K-2 building that transitioned to a 3-8 building. So some quite unique circumstances, and most of those configurations were created because of the growth of our district. We're a growing suburban school district. I would agree with everybody what's been said so far. The key is, you know, how you make those transitions, and part of our comprehensive school improvement plan is to really make sure that those transitions that the students are going through are smooth and productive for them.
Well, it's interesting that the 3-8-8 building, almost like the mm-hmm. the Catholic school K-8 that you're talking about, what you went to when you were a kid, and I taught at one of those. How is the culture there different from the more specialized on the other part of the district where you have K 1-2, 3-4?
Well, the opportunities are very good because you have a very good chance for vertical teaming.
What does that mean, vertical teaming?
So, like, the third grade teachers know exactly what's expected in fourth grade. Fourth grade knows what's expected in fifth grade. Everybody's in the same building.
Yeah.
You know, so you have that opportunity to really collaborate and really, you know, have time to, you know, to communicate. Whereas oftentimes you'll have a 6-7-8 building that's separate from an elementary, you know, type of setting. So the opportunities for collaboration are unique, and you can, you know, you're able to make that a productive one.
No, from having taught in a K-8 school, on the one hand, a lot of the parents of younger kids worried about their kids being in the same building as eighth graders. The parents of the older kids were really happy to have their kids in a building with the little ones because they felt like it was safer and more protected. And I wonder if in your 3-8 grade school building, you find that.
Well, you know, to put a lot of emphasis on the leadership of the building, I think is important. It's all about your planning, your strategic planning, and how how you're going to better serve your children. To just put kids in a building and not, you know, give credence to the fact that there are age differences, we're very fortunate in Platte County to have really strong leadership in the buildings that honor that and are able to create plans that that will support those children.
And Drew Tomlin, what about that kindergarten to eighth grade model? Are a few years back, it seemed like a number of districts were going to that, including the mm-hmm. Kansas City district. How's it being looked at right now?
It's definitely a grade configuration and a model that, you know, we honor and respect. I'd say that as long as within that K-8 school, that the students who are 10 to 15 have responsive curricula, have responsive teachers, who understand their unique needs. That's what it's all about. You know, I've worked in an elementary school setting as well, just a K through five. And yes, those kindergarten students through fifth grade, that is a different type of school setting from working with the middle school kids. But the K through eight, I think, is it's a wonderful model as long as we've said, that the unique needs of those 10 through 15-year-olds are being met.
And Mike, what does the day look like for a middle schooler or middle grade? I mean, I know that we're not only talking about middle schools, but what does a day look like for a kid of that age?
Well, it's definitely different than the elementary. I mean, it's almost like our building down on the south end of our district, that's 3-8 that I'm describing, there's a middle school aspect to that school. Like Drew said, to make sure that we're honoring the uniqueness of those children. And then there's also an elementary aspect of it. So it's almost like two schools in, you know, under one building. We don't have full-blown teams at this point. But we make sure that there's collaboration so that if a child, has needs, that those teachers, that basically the students aren't falling through the cracks, and that the teachers are communicating about helping those children. But they run through a schedule just like a 6-7-8 building, where they would have a social studies class or they would have a communication arts class and whatnot. We do have exploratories for sixth graders where they explore music, PE, family and consumer science type courses. And then in the 7-8 grades, then they can choose. It's more of an elective-based type thing.
And I want to ask Drew about the other configuration that Kansas City has right now, that 7 through 12.
Right.
What's the idea behind that?
Well, a 7 through 12 model, from what I know of it, obviously it's more of a high school focused. I'd say that the impetus on that is really getting students, college and career ready. And I think that it's a way that schools need to get students prepared. And then those students, again, I know it sounds like a broken record, but those kids that are in seventh and eighth grade and then going into ninth grade are vastly different from those, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders. And as long as that's that configuration, that school that's using that 7 through 12 model is responsive to the needs of those 7th and 8th graders, I think it's okay. But what can happen, what I've seen happen is that the 7th and 8th grade in that 7 through 12 model, those teachers feel pressured to get kids ready for high school. And middle school should not just be treated as the launching pad for high school. We've got to deal with the kids and who they are and their unique needs right then, right there in middle level.
And like in K to 8 schools, you also get worries about 7th grade students being in the same building as 11th and 12th graders.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, I think that there are a lot of mentoring and student leadership possibilities even within that configuration too. Even in the 6 through 8 model, we've had 8th graders be mentors to 6th graders, 7th graders be mentors to 6th graders. So I think even if you have a 7 through 12 model, you can have a senior who mentors a 7th grade student. So it can be looked upon as, oh my gosh, those big kids down the hall, how are they going to treat my 7th grader? But if a school and a school leadership look at that from a positive point of view as an opportunity, I think that's all right.
We have a call now, Emily from Lee's Summit. Hi, Emily.
Hi, I just wanted to speak to the fact I am a former teacher. I am retired now, but I just wanted to speak to the fact that all of this planning and transition and teaming requires that teachers have planned time and that teachers can get together. And my understanding is that a lot of these transitions are happening because of the growth and because of the building space. And a lot of times what happens is that faculties are used more efficiently, but then the very integral planning time and teaming time that really helps them get together and plan these transitions and understand these kids at the place they are gets thrown out the window when we lose our planning time.
Mm. Scott, as you've planned for this transition in Liberty, have you thought about planning time for teachers?
You bet. And I appreciate Emily's comments because I think she's right that we have to equip our teachers by giving them time and we honor their time. You know, teaming for me as a middle-level principal is right at my heart and soul, and I want to make sure that we do that. And so with in our current format, we have collaborative teams for our teachers, both interdisciplinary as well as content-specific, so that a common group of teachers have a common group of kids that they can discuss, that they can support, that they can be there with. Because anytime you can get a group of adults together and have them focused, we know that those kids are going to be serviced well. You know, when kids are known, they do better, and we want to make sure our kids are known. And so as we've made this change, we've also worked hard to protect that collaborative time during the day. And so that is an important piece of that. Sometimes it's not easy to do because we live in the world of budgets and making sure that we're using our facilities and resources efficiently. But anytime we can create that opportunity for teachers, everybody wins.
And how much planning time are you thinking about next year? I mean, typically, what would it be in a day?
Well, what we are looking at, especially with our core content teachers, is to allow them 2 to 3 times during the week an opportunity. Our class times are about 45 minutes long, and so we're looking at 2 to 3 times a week that we would be able to set aside time for those teachers to be able to come together, to look at the content they're teaching, to make sure that it's appropriate, to make sure that it's relevant, and then also to be able to support those individual students.
And that's together as a team,
right?
And then they get planning time individually too.
Correct, right.
That once a day or?
Every day they have their own personal time to prepare for their individual classes. You know, we really want to look at that collaborative framework, that what I do in my classroom is not the only thing I need to worry about, that we on a bigger scale, as a whole school, how do we link arms and come together to support our kids?
And Mike, what about in Platte County?
About the same thing. And I will also say, I think Emily's dead on that, you know, the time for teachers to be able to really discuss the needs of kids is absolutely paramount to our success. In Platte County, we do something very similar to what Scott's saying, where the core teachers have 2 plan times, one with a teaming concept where they talk about the kids and the responding to the interventions that they possibly need throughout the day. And then they also have a personal, or not personal, but a more of their lesson planning time.
And Emily brought up the issue of facilities, which is one of the driving forces behind school configuration, I think, in any district. And Scott, you mentioned budgets, too. I wonder, how do facilities affect what kind of configuration you end up having? No, Scott.
Sure. I think it's a great question. It's something that we face in Liberty. For instance, my building was built in 1923 and wasn't really configured for middle school education. And so we've had to do what we can to create that climate for the kids. You know, facility-wise, it's expensive to build new buildings. And so if you can utilize what you have, you're going to be better off. And I think in our age of technology integration and how we can better use technology resources, we can break away from the traditional 4 walls, 25 desks in the classroom, and we can start utilizing spaces, cafeteria space, hallway space, that before was not able to be utilized, because now we know kids are constantly learning. It doesn't take an adult in front of the room all the time for kids to be learning. And so how do we utilize some of those different spaces and opportunities?
How does technology help that? Like, what does that look like?
Well, you know, there's so many things coming so fast at us. Everything from Khan Academy, which are online courses that we can connect students with. You know, Mike mentioned interventions, and we're finding a lot of ways that technology can help us to intervene for kids who need more focused one-on-one time. And it's an opportunity for our teachers to connect with kids in a more customized way and a more individualized way. And so the better we can use that, the better we can use our facilities.
How about in Platte County, Mike?
Definitely facilities, you know, is something that we're always having to consider. You know, I too was a principal of a building that was built in 1952. It was actually the original high school of the Park Hill School District at the time. And, you know, it's about the people. It's not about the building. And it's about the leadership to create, you know, that atmosphere that's good for kids and good for adults to collaborate.
And Drew, what about nationally? How do districts, you know, deal with the buildings that they have and then try and create the formats that are best for those age kids?
Well, I mean, that's an excellent question. And, you know, as has already been noted, every school and every school situation is different from a facility point of view. But, you know, with young adolescents 10 to 15 years old, travel is a big consideration. So if you've ever seen a sixth grader carry a backpack at the end of the day, sometimes their backpack is much bigger than they are. So traveling class to class with all their books or anything like that, that's something that we need to consider. And it is, I mean, being progressive and using your building in unique ways to meet those needs is key.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, how do you teach middle school students? Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We're talking about improving education for middle-level students. Our guests are Mike Brown of Platte County School District, Scott Carr from Liberty, and Drew Tomlin from the Association for Middle-Level Education. What do you think middle schools should look like for kids to succeed? Kansas City, tell us your thoughts by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can post your comments to Facebook or Twitter. We're at KCURCST. That's it. So I'm wondering, you know, Mike Brown, you're at Platte County right now, but you also were at Park Hill before that, which has a pretty unique format where they have a sixth grade center. Can you explain sort of the idea behind that?
Sure, absolutely. We have nine elementary schools in the Park Hill School District that fed into a sixth grade center that we had these children for a year. And then from there, we had 2 7-8 buildings, and each 7-8 building fed into a particular high school. So the sixth grade center was absolutely the first and last time that a particular graduating class would all be together in the Park Hill School District. And it was, I got to tell you, it was a fun building to be the principal of. It was extraordinary. We did have the team concept. We had 8 teams in the sixth grade, and we basically had a twofold purpose, not only to support these children academically, but to really prepare them, you know, for their next level in the, you know, the 7-12 spectrum of education.
What was fun about it?
You know, the kids just coming in, you know, nervous about middle school, and we had you know, all of them together. We didn't have to really focus on, you know, the 7th and 8th, you know, type of factors that can go along with that. And so we had these 11-12 year old children, and you know, it takes unique people to support these children. I got to be the quirky principal that, you know, to help relate to these kids, and it was just a blast. It was a lot of fun.
Makes me kind of wonder what you did.
All kinds of things. I'll tell you one thing, you know, that we did is I made sure every single day they saw me. Every day I wanted to be a part of their lives in some way. And, you know, I did that in some very unique ways. We also brought some bully prevention types of things to the building to really kind of educate them as they move forward. And it was a good culture.
And in unique ways, you said. I'm just curious.
One thing I did is we had every morning we did morning announcements, but we were very fortunate. The kids did the morning announcements and broadcast through a television throughout the building. And I actually had my own show that was called DB Time for Dr. Brown. And so every morning I was on the TV show, and
nice.
I would be dressed in some kind of outfit or something to make them laugh and make their day. And that was fun.
Does it do something to the confidence of kids when just their grade is the only grade in the school? They're not, you know, on the top of the totem pole like in a, let's say, kindergarten to sixth grade school. They're not at the bottom as they would be at 6th to 8th. It's just them. And
I believe so. You know, we worked really hard. I mean, you only had these children for a year. And so, you know, as a principal, we started the transition process in March, where I would go to every elementary school and meet the kids and speak with them for what they're going to experience at Plaza. And my assistant principal would meet with the fifth grade teachers and get the, you know, reading levels and important information about these children, because if we waited until they got there, we wouldn't have enough time. And then we also, on the release end, we worked with the staff at the 278 buildings to make sure that these children were going to be okay. And so we worked very hard at the transition piece to that, knowing the, you know, the large responsibility that comes with that.
And were there outcomes that were unusual, either sort of anecdotal or just in terms of their academic progress?
Our data showed, if you look at national, you know, type of data, you will see kind of dips in student achievement around the sixth grade level. And ours were very high. Our data showed that our kids were academically successful. Our climate and culture data was extremely high. Kids felt safe. They felt cared for. You know, so I believe it was, you know, we have some data to show that it was successful.
And Drew Tomlin, what kind of results do you get during these transition times usually nationally? I mean, is there usually, there's a dip in sixth grade? Is there a dip in ninth grade when kids leave middle school?
Exactly. Yeah. And that sixth grade center model, it sounds really progressive and phenomenal. I applaud your success there. Yeah. Nationally, there is a dip in sixth grade and in ninth grade. There's a dip academically and there's a spike in behavioral incidences because kids are learning who they are and they feel a little bit marginalized at the bottom of the totem pole, as you say. So, you know, I've heard of a lot of high schools that are going to what they call a ninth grade academy model, which sounds and feels very similar to a middle school teaming model where they have their ninth grade kiddos on teams to kind of make them transition a little easier from middle school to high school just to deal with those national spike trends.
Just talking about the Liberty School District, we're going to bring in Todd from Liberty. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well.
And you were going to talk about, you have kids in the district.
I do. I have a child in elementary school and a middle schooler, and I actually graduated from Liberty in 82, so I'm a product of that school system. And I have to say that the experience my son has in middle school is really extraordinary. The team concept that they bring to his middle school and the sense that all the teachers are working together, and they really do get to know my son, and he gets to feel known. And it's a wonderful blend of broadened independence for him to make sort of his own decisions and understand his own individuality. And enough structure and stability that provides a platform for him to do that. Very different than when I grew up in the school district.
Well, and when you grew up, did you just feel like you're kind of on your own?
Yeah, very much on my own. And I don't even recall parent-teacher conferences, you know, 30-some years ago. Maybe they had them, but they just didn't stand out. But, I felt very... very much on my own. The culture that they have now with no bullying and respect for kids is just tremendous. Again, very different from my experience 30 years ago or so.
That must be nice to hear, Scott.
It is. I appreciate that from you, Todd.
And I wonder, just looking more broadly at this age group, what do we know about the development of early adolescence? I know that's something that all of you gentlemen have looked at. It's kind of unusual to be talking with teachers and have it be all men, I have to say. usually there's more women than men in the room. But Scott, maybe start with you. I mean, what do we know now about that age group?
Well, I'll tell you what I think I know after a few years' experience is that relationships rule the day. Kids want to know where they fit in, who they identify with, who cares about them, and who they can count on. I think for a lot of our kids, that's more important than the air they breathe. And that's why to be at the middle level, you know, Mike talked about being quirky, but that's that's every day. That's our life every day, and it's a fun job to get paid to get to do every day, to be like that. But it's intentional, because that's what kids need. They need connections. They want to know who cares about them, and everything else is almost secondary to that. And so as we develop our middle levels, you know, that's an important piece for me, is making sure that we have adults in the building that know how to build relationships and know how to make connections with kids.
Mike, what about you?
You know, I don't really know how much more I can add to that. I just think that it's so important for kids to feel safe and cared for, because I think before you can achieve anything academically, that child has to know that you care about them. So I agree totally with Scott that the relationship part is the key to success, especially at that age.
And Drew Tomlin, is there any new information that's changing the way we teach kids at this age?
Yes and no. I mean, we know that they are that technology has a huge role in their lives. They are the digital natives, and we are often tourists on their landscape. So that's definitely affecting how we, navigate those waters with them. But I would say that a great deal of what is true about young adolescents remains the same as it has been when we were young adolescents. I think, you know, we need adults in the buildings, teachers and administrators and staff who care and value them and understand that in this time they're going through the most rapid physical and cognitive growth that they'll ever go through. And the only time that is equal to that is birth to 3 years old.
Wow.
So, and the only difference there is birth to 3 years old, you're not really cognizant of what you're going through. Whereas a middle school kid, they are aware every day of all the changes that they're going through. So you definitely need adults who value, you know, I classify it with five R's that we need in our schools: rigor, relationship, relevant curriculum, and routine. And then also we need people to remember what they were like at this age. Our decision-making skills at that age were very different than what we're like as adults.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Our guests are Mike Brown of Platte County School District, Scott Carr of the Liberty School District, and Drew Tomlin of the Association for Middle Level Education. And we're talking about middle school, or those middle school years. And, you know, I know for a lot of people, you think back to kind of a Lord of the Flies type experience, because you didn't have one person. We've referred to this before, like you didn't have one person really following you, like in elementary school where you had your teacher who was a very important person in your life. But sometimes if you have a program where you have all different teachers, there's no one that you have a particular connection to. It's interesting. We have an email from Don who said he went to a middle school in Portland that was 6 to 8, and he had a homeroom and then special classes outside of homeroom. As you progress through the grades, you spent less time in your homeroom, and that helped his transition to high school. And I guess we'll start with Liberty. Are there ways that you're trying to find a teacher that can really be monitoring the progress, both socially and academically, of each child?
Sure. And there's lots of different models that we can follow. We have a mentoring program, advisory programs where teachers are assigned to small groups of kids, and that's a purpose. And I go back to what I said earlier, that I really believe when kids are known, they have a better chance of succeeding, and known beyond just a grade in a grade book or attendance on attendance sheet, but to really know where their interests lie, to know what they struggle with, to know even sometimes the baggage they come to school with. And so we actually have an invisible mentoring program where we'll assign teachers to students that need additional support, and they go out of their way to make sure they say hi to that student, to make sure that they really dig into them. And the student may not even know why, and that's okay. We want them to realize that they're just like all the other students, and because they don't want to be singled out. They don't want to be different or special. And so we try to find those ways to support them even without them knowing to do that.
It's hard as a teacher if you only see a student for 45 minutes a day and then you have 100 other students to form that relationship. Now, Mike, what do you have in Platte County to help teachers do that?
And, you know, I think that's why that teaming concept is so important, because, you know, teachers are able to talk about the needs of the individual child. And, you know, actually, if you think about it, if you're on a team of four teachers with the different contents, think about the opportunities that child has to connect with, you know, the many different adults. And that's, you know, we don't have a formal homeroom and things like that, but just the the opportunity for those teachers to talk about kids and get them the help that they need, either academically or socially and emotionally.
And what about special education? What does that look like for these middle grade levels? Scott?
Sure. You know, it's an important piece of what we do every day is to stand in that gap and to help students overcome whether it's an extreme disability or even a minor one that's just a roadblock for them to mature and move forward at the rate of their peers. And so, you know, we do that in a lot of different ways. We have our special education teachers who work incredibly hard. One of the most important things that we provide for them is opportunity to connect with all the teachers. You know, I taught science growing up, and one of the things I learned becoming a principal is the best thing I could do is to listen to my special education teachers, because they've been trained specifically to help overcome those gaps. And so as we move forward with our new configuration, one of the models that we're looking at is a co-teaching model where we are connecting our special education teachers with the teachers in those content areas, and not just being a support in the classroom, but actually co-teaching the class so that all students receive those services, not just students that have been identified specifically.
Because with the special education teacher might have a different approach.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And has a completely different toolbox than what I learned as a science teacher. And so if we're going to meet the unique needs of unique individuals to help them overcome those roadblocks, then we need to make sure that we're calling on the just the professionalism and the experience that others have.
And Drew Tomlin of the Association mm-hmm. for Middle Level Education, just nationally, what do you see in terms of special education for middle school students?
Well, I mean, as was just mentioned, moving towards inclusion and team teaching, that's definitely the key. Because, you know, special education, and also, of course, you need to meet their IEPs and everything like that, and make sure they're making progress on their goals.
That's their individual educational programs, right?
Yeah, sorry. But, you know, for the middle level, specifically with special education students, they need to see themselves in the story of school. And too often, what I've seen of special education students and their lives is that sometimes they can be relegated to certain classrooms and not really intermingle with everyone else. And that makes them not see themselves as full characters in the story of school. So a middle-level program that is sensitive to their needs and sensitive to not just their academic growth, but to their social and behavioral growth, puts that inclusion model firmly in place.
And are your kids in the middle grades? What kind of education do you think they're getting? What do they need? Call us at 816-235-2888 or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Just wondering about parents, sort of as school administrators and having been principals and teachers, and what do you think parents should know about raising their middle school child and preparing them for that age level and that age level in school? Scott.
Sure. Well, I have a unique perspective because I am the parent of a middle school student. I have an eighth grade daughter who's actually in my building, and my son, who's a senior, obviously went through my building at some point also. So I've had to actually put into practice what I preach. And so that 20-minute drive every morning with my daughter really is eye-opening as far as her experience in middle school. And I think what we need to understand about parents is that they send us their very best. They don't keep the good ones at home. And so when they come to us with concerns, we need to understand their perspective and that that's their pride and joy. And we need to approach it that way. And so I think, you know, I talk to parents all the time who ask me what's happened to their child, what happened to the cute, cuddly, kiss goodnight, you know, hug me when they get out of the car, and they've been replaced with this stranger who hides under the seat and doesn't want anything to do with me unless it has to do with money.
It's
and so
hard.
We you know, the transition to middle school isn't just hard on kids. It's hard on parents too, because their role as a parent is changing from the nurturer to the collaborator in a lot of ways, and their position changes to shoulder to shoulder instead of above them in some ways. And we want to help parents through that just as much as we help kids through that.
And what do parents need to know?
Parents need to know that kids at the middle level want to be adults, but they don't have adult skills. And so some of the mistakes they make are based on tripping through that part of life. And so I think parents need to have a lot of grace But at the same time, we all need structure. And when I say they, I'm talking about me, because I have the same pitfalls as a parent, that I need to remind myself about what structure and grace, how to balance those two together as I move my son and daughter towards their adult years.
Mike, any thoughts about what you want parents to know or what you
sure.
feel like?
You know, I really see this as an opportunity for improvement. I can't speak for Liberty, but in the Platte County School District, I feel like we need to do a better job of communicating. In fact, I love the five R's that Drew said earlier. I think those are things we need to help educate parents with the different communication vehicles that we have in the 21st century. I feel like that's an opportunity for improvement for us.
Drew, anything to add?
Well, I think that parents need to know it's okay. It's okay that a lot of these changes that are happening are perfectly normal. For instance, you know, with decision making, it's neurologically fine that, you know, there's a part of the brain that kids want to try things, but they don't have the brakes. They don't have the things that will stop them from necessarily trying those things. And we all go through it, and that's part of it. I think that parents also need to know that they need to be present. And that means not just physically present in their children's lives, because they don't really want them there, but they also need to be virtually present, that in their social landscape, they need to be aware that on Facebook or on Twitter or wherever they're, navigating their social lives, parents need to be aware of that too.
Well, just want to bring in Larry from Topeka. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Hey, great conversation this morning. These gentlemen really know what's going on in middle school. I retired as a middle school computer teacher after 34 years at Lake of the Ozarks. And, a couple things that they pointed up, very important for, in my opinion, and I think theirs too, from what they've said, you know, time for teams of teachers to meet. In terms of sometimes a student will be having difficulty in the classroom, and one teacher has the ability to reach that kid, whatever the formula is, and especially young teachers will say to veteran teachers, but not always, well, how are you reaching this kid? Because what I'm trying now isn't working. And I gained lots of insight over years with my team teaching and time to plan, you know, and teaching the same steps for writing processes across the curriculum. You know, if the math teacher teaches kids to write about a mathematician, it should follow the same guidelines that the English teacher has written, et cetera.
Well, it's interesting. I wonder, in some places, I don't know what kind of license you need or what kind of background you need to teach middle school. In some cases, you can have a high school license and teach middle school, or an elementary school license and teach middle school. I don't know if that's true of your two districts. Do you think that there's certain things that teachers need to know specifically for that middle grades? Scott?
Oh, absolutely. I do. And I think when we've talked about the different models like the 7-12 and the K-8 models, I think Drew alluded to this, is that it is so important that the structure is not important. It's the experience that the kids have. And you need to make sure that the adults that are going to come in contact with them day after day are equipped to understand not only the content. Sometimes the content's secondary to understanding the student that you're trying to connect with and teach with. So absolutely, it's a different skill set.
Because high school teachers are more prepared in terms of content and maybe a little bit less of pedagogy, and then elementary school tend to focus on the pedagogy and less on the content. Is that?
I think that's a good way to explain it. And sometimes the middle level gets stuck in the middle, so to speak, because our job is not to just prepare them for high school. Our job is to prepare them for life, and there's a lot of ways that we can do that with our middle level kids.
Drew, what do you find in terms of teacher preparation for these middle levels?
Yeah, well, I find that in terms of a grade level structure, I know I'm painting with a broad stroke when I say this, but you know what I've found is that sixth grade teachers tend to be definitely more nurturing. Because they understand that these kids who are coming to them in the middle school, are just basically a little bit taller fifth graders. And then seventh grade teachers are definitely, they see they're the middle of the middle, so they've got to take it all. And then eighth grade teachers I've seen are more content specialists in some ways. They're still teaming, but they really start to emphasize that high school preparation language. So, I'm seeing that, you know, for teacher preparation overall in the nation, I think that there is a response to this this type of dialogue, that there needs to be a specific degree, a specific licensure that needs to happen to have people ready for middle school.
Well, I want to just thank you all for joining us today. Our guests today were Scott Carr of the Liberty School District, Mike Brown, Assistant Superintendent of Platte County, and Drew Tomlin, Director of Middle Level Services at the Association for Middle Level Education. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore Arctic ice and archery. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Suzanne Hogan. Up to Date is next with Shrinking House Sizes and The Drunken Botanist. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. See you Sunday on KC Currents.